silence in the woods. Trembling badly, uncontrollably, I kept the gun trained on Bell with my good hand. It took incredible effort just to get over the slick rocks to where he lay. By the time I reached him, there was no movement. I took his arm, held it up. I checked, but he had no pulse. I checked it again. Nothing. Nothing but the silence of the woods and the awful cold. Michael Bell was dead, and so was Mary Smith. And very soon, in these freezing wet clothes, I would be too. Chapter 119. My slow climb up and out of the gully from the crash site was hellish. Nothing but excruciating pain, dizziness, and nausea that passed in milliseconds. The only blessing was that I barely remembered any of it. Somehow I managed to get out to the main road, where an alarmed college student in a Subaru picked me up. I never even got his name. I guess I passed out in the back seat of his car. By the next morning, Michael Bell's body had been recovered from the stream, and I was resting in a bed at Fletcher Allen Hospital in Burlington. Resting is probably the wrong word, though. Local police came and went from my room continually. I spent hours on the phone with my office in Washington, the L.A. Bureau office, and Jean Galetta trying to piece together everything that had happened from the start of the murder spree. Bell's plan had been a feat of convolution and madness, but his cover was ultimately simple. Diversion. And he'd succeeded until the very end. As Jean pointed out to me, Michael Bell wrote and produced stories for a living.